right, everyone. Welcome to the Sports Gambling Podcast. I'm Sean, Making Money Green, your host, with my partner in crime, my partner in picks, Ryan, Mad Dog Kramer. Ryan, how you doing?
I'm great, Sean. Thanks for the Mad Dog nickname.
I like that. I like it. Give you the Mad Dog. There's that Mad Dog Russo. I feel like you're more of a Mad Dog than that guy.
I think he got the name from being, like, retarded or having a stroke in his face. I mean,
yeah, Mad Dog Russo, he's over on satellite radio. Things aren't going well for him. Meanwhile, I don't know if you followed the story of Mike and the Mad Dog, but Mad Dog Russo left WFAN, the sports talk station in New York, went over to Sirius to start his own station, got a really big deal, and now Mike, Mike is just doing the show by himself, and he's doing great. He's, like, killing it in the ratings right now.
I mean, as it turns out, it's sports talk radio. People aren't there for the personality. Plus, anyone from the area, that guy's really fucking annoying. He just kind of screams. He's a San Francisco Giant fan. No one really gives a shit about that. He's the only guy in America that defended Barry Bonds. He isn't a likable guy.
Yeah, isn't he, like, really big into tennis? Seems like a very odd interest for a New York sports talk guy.
He's big into the non-sports, you know, tennis, baseball.
And it's funny that he did well in New York, because you think it would have to be a local guy, or at least someone who is really big into New York sports. But his show, I guess, had more of a national appeal. I'm surprised that they were that popular in New York for that long.
I think he did well for the same reason Jim Rome does really well. He says shit that annoys people. I mean, Dan Le Batard just says people watch his stupid show because he says stuff that annoys people.
Yeah, there is something too. Just as long as you be annoying and you know, get people fired up, you get people to call in, then it sounds like, oh man, this guy's controversial. He's stirring up opinions, making headlines. I mean, think about it. The only time a sports talk show host or a columnist makes headline is when they say something completely outrageous.
Or when you're Rush Limbaugh and you say some horribly racist things about Donovan McNabb.
What was his thing? It was Donovan McNabb. The media is just hyping up Donovan McNabb because he's black. And then
I almost think, in retrospect, it wasn't that bad, but he more or less said that Donovan McNabb is trying to not be a black quarterback. Something along those lines. Like, the media wants him to be a black quarterback, and he doesn't want to be. And it wasn't terribly racist, but it's ESPN, and they're tight buttholes.
Yeah, yeah, you can't say anything controversial. Well,
why, why hire him if you're? Why hire the guy if you're going to? I mean, it's Rush Limbaugh. He says dumb shit all the time.
Yeah, I mean, he's high on Oxycontin. He's going to say some outlandish things about immigration, that kind of stuff.
He's going to the Dominican Republic to have sex with little boys.
That was a definite story that just kind of got swept under the rug pretty easily. Like, not only did he have a painkiller addiction, then was it the Dominican? Yeah, he was coming back from the Dominican with Viagra, and I guess the Dominican is known for its sex trade, especially among potentially young.
Well, that's the thing. All right, so first of all, so you leave the country if you're into some weird shit. You go to Thailand or the Caribbean. And first of all, it definitely was messing around with underage chicks. Otherwise, just get prostitutes, right? Yeah. So then take that to another level. And apparently the Dominican Republic's big on the young boy trade, similar to Thailand. It's like Thailand East. And, yeah, I don't know. How did he not get in any sort of trouble? He barely got in trouble for that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just the hypocrisy of, like, oh, yeah, we're super conservative, but, oh, yeah, well, Rush Limbaugh, everyone makes mistakes, all right? Back off, Rush Limbaugh. Wow. Speaking of making mistakes, we didn't make a mistake. We went 5-0, Ryan, in our Las Vegas Super Hilton contest. That's where we paid a large chunk of change to be involved in this, essentially the World Series of Sports Gambling. That's how I quickly explain it in conversations.
We should, quick background, it's the most prestigious NFL sports handicapping contest. It's hosted,
I love how prestigious is included.
It's hosted by the world famous Las Vegas Hilton Sportsbook.
Yep.
It is a $1,500 buy-in.
Yep.
And essentially you have the top handicappers in the world entered in here. It's gotten some recent fame due to the sports guy Bill Simmons entering it and writing about it, as along with Chad Millman. But essentially, I think this year there's 517 entries, and you essentially get a point for every win. And like Sean said, we went 5-0 last week.
Yeah, the kind of difference here is from your office pools or stuff like that where you pick all the games. In this one, you pick five of the games. Obviously, you pick against the spread, but you get to pick the five games that you decide, you know, which ones you feel strongly about. So I think that's really kind of the skill. Whereas if you're picking every game, it's easier to be lucky because essentially it could be a 50-50 thing. Obviously, there's some skill in it, but I think when you have to pick out the games that you have a strong opinion on, it means you're, you know, you have more of a consensus on what you think is actually going to happen.
Yeah, and I think it might be time that we should start plugging our pick set name so people can follow us on the leaderboard.
Yeah, I'll post a link over on sportsgamblingpodcast.com where these shows are going to be archived, the podcast, obviously. And, yeah, we'll link up our name. Our name on that contest is the Money Plays, right?
Just Money Plays.
Oh, Money Plays. All right.
We started off slow, came out of the gates a little slow. First 2 weeks, 3-6-1. And since then, we've been 12-3, including a 5-0 week last week. So,
yeah, 5-0 week. And, it really – because, you know, at the end of the day, you feel like it's this $300,000 bet, essentially, because that's what the ultimate prize money is. So in a way, you felt like, oh, I won some money today. You didn't really win any money. We climbed some places, but it felt really good. I think only two other entries out of 500 people went 5-0 last week. And we were talking about this. Those picks felt easy. Those picks felt like, yeah, this. How did these go wrong? And I've had that feeling before, but it's rare to have that feeling and then to actually go 5-0.
We did point it. I did point it out last week that this was the first week I feel really good about the picks. And like you said, only 3 out of 517 people went undefeated. And not only that, but the top 5 picks went 1-3-1. So it was a good week to do well because most people didn't.
All right, well let's do that. Let's recap last week's action. We can highlight our top 5 picks. And obviously if you didn't get in on the Super Hilton contest, it's not too late to make money on your picks. You can do it for free by going to winthetrophy.com. You enter the referral code STG. No, you don't need anything to sign up, just an email address. That's all you need. And then basically what happens is you're given 1,000 free credits each week, and whatever you have at the end of the week that's over 1,000 counts towards your bankable chips, and that's actually real cash. And I've been doing pretty well over there, and so you can actually make – it's not a lot of money because it's free and you're not really risking any money, but slowly you can actually earn some change. And then if you get to be one of the genius pickers – You can make some real money there. So check out winthetrophy.com, STG for Sean T. Green. Check out that referral code. All right, Ryan, let's go over our five picks that we had for the contest. Let's see. One of our first picks, a pick I was high on, was the Carolina Panthers against the New Orleans Saints. I think the Las Vegas Hilton had it at 5.5.
I think it closed at – it might have been 6, actually.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. That 6.
And, yeah, Carolina's been they continue to be undefeated against the spread. They actually played – I mean, this is a game where they had some chances to win. But, yeah, they play well. Cam Newton, that team just moves the rock. And I don't think New Orleans can stop too many people. Unfortunately, Carolina can't stop too many people either, or they might have more than one win. So,
yeah, I mean, if you're a Carolina Panther fan, obviously you're excited about this season. Cam Newton doing much better than expected, exceeding expectations from a playing standpoint, from a gambling standpoint. This guy's been Joe Montana. That's all he does is cover spreads. All right, so that was one of our picks. We also had Jacksonville. I think it was
this, Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. The Cincinnati in the Cincinnati-Jacksonville game. We had the pick as Cincinnati getting 2.5 points. I think, the line kind of did some crazy stuff in those last couple days. The Hilton lines close on Wednesday, and that's the lines we go by here in the podcast. But I don't know what happened in the Cincy line, but it ended up being Cincy being favored by 2.5 points at kickoff. Either way, Cincy won 30-20. Not a pretty game by any imagination, Ryan.
This would have been an interesting game to be in the sports book. Although the Cincinnati had it covered at the end, if you had a teaser with Jacksonville in any capacity, that last play where they're laddering the ball and trying to score a go-ahead touchdown, Jacksonville, your mentality is just go down, end the game,
yeah.
I win. And what happens, they lateral the ball, they fumble it, Cincinnati picks it up, runs it back for a touchdown. There goes the cover. So that's That would have been an interesting moment to see in the sports book. Although, who knows? I don't think too many people were teased in that game.
Another interesting moment in the sports book and for our Hilton contest, we took Detroit laying 5.5 points, which is huge for Detroit, but not anymore. The revitalized Detroit Lions at home Monday night. First Monday night game in a long time. The Ford Field was rocking, as we predicted. They got off to their typical slow start, but battled back in the second half. They beat the Chicago Bears 24-13. But, of course, this is where it gets really interesting. 1 second ago, Jay Cutler takes a snap. They're driving the fourth quarter. They're down by 11 points. I guess the smart play would have been to kick the field goal.
We need to start keeping track of coaches that don't want to win games. I mean, they threw a pass to Matt Forte to, like, the 25-yard line with about 45, 50 seconds left. Right there, you spike it, you kick the field goal, you have 40 seconds to do an onside kick and maybe try to actually tie the game.
Yeah.
Instead, they just run it down. It gets to the point, they complete a pass, they're at the 15-yard line. Jay Cutler goes up like he's going to spike it. I think he realized there wasn't enough time to spike it, so he takes the ball.
Yeah, like he snaps it with 1 second left, realizes that as he had snapped it, time had expired. So he's like, all right, whatever, fuck it, I'll just throw the ball.
And Detroit's defense acted as if the game was over. No one was trying. The guy catches the ball, takes 3 steps. He's literally a yard out, and luckily the safety just smashes him. He gets tackled on the 1 yard line.
Oh, he just came out of nowhere and just brutally attacked him. And this is where being at home, being on Monday night, a division game, you go and you make that tackle out of pride. If they were on the road, if they were playing like Jacksonville in Jacksonville on a 10 a.m. game, they wouldn't have made that tackle.
It's just unbelievable to me that these are NFL coaches being paid millions of dollars and they have no idea about a proper strategy to actually try to win the game.
Okay, now another primetime game we correctly picked, the Green Bay Packers laying 6 points in Atlanta, and they covered that by winning 25-14. It seemed like Atlanta was off to a good start, 14-3 to start off the game. Green Bay came back. I was kind of hungover at this point. I didn't catch all of this game. Ryan, did you watch this? What were the highlights?
I watched most of it, and I think I mentioned on the show the only thing that would make me nervous about Atlanta in this game is if they got out to an early lead and they would be able to control the clock, and that's exactly what they did. They got out to an early lead. It seemed like they kind of had Rodgers' number. It was 14-3, and you thought, oh crap, they're just going to run the ball, pound the rock. And even one of Aaron Rodgers' offensive linemen went out. They were getting pressure on him. And then all it takes is a couple big plays, and that was it. And I read an interesting stat about Matt Ryan. Basically, he's awesome.
It's complete garbage.
Yeah, no, he is incredibly awesome during the first 15 to 20 plays of each game when they script it out. And then he can't adjust. And
now, where do you think that comes from? What do you think causes a guy to drop off so much after you're done calling the scripted plays?
I think he thinks he's Peyton Manning, and he's not. I think he prepares a ton and is really prepared for the plays that he knows are going to be called, and he knows where to look, and he can read the defense early. But as soon as the defense starts making adjustments, I think it confuses him. And he didn't look horrible, but I think it was just a couple big plays by Green Bay, and then I don't know, it was weird. The Green Bay offensive line looked horrible, and then all of a sudden they just figured it out. I think that's going to give them trouble going forward, though. They lost their best offensive lineman, and they look shaky at times to an Atlanta team who doesn't have a great pass rush with Abraham out. So something to keep an eye on.
Okay, AFC East battle. The New England Patriots seemingly pushed against the New York Jets 30-21. Another game where it just seemed like New England passed all over the New York Jets. The New York Jets, I feel like they've lost their identity. They're not that – it doesn't seem like they're that smash-mouth, run-the-ball, defensive swagger team. They got rattled really bad the week before against the Ravens. Does New York have a chance to come back? I feel like the Bills are off to a hot start. Patriots are looking good. Are they out of the playoffs? Is it too early to call their season over?
The Jets are done. So I don't know if you're following, but there's a new statistic to rate quarterbacks out there called QBR. It essentially removes some elements out of the control of the quarterback, like yard after the catch, and it includes things like, you know, rolling out to make a play, running for a first down, completing a pass under duress. And Mark Sanchez is the only two quarterbacks he's better than in that stat is Blaine Gabbert, who's a rookie on a really bad team, and Kerry Collins. So,
well, we've talked about this early on the year. I remember thinking about this, that the idea that these game managers have a limited shelf life, and Mark Sanchez kind of seemed to be an aberration in that he took him to the AFC Championship back-to-back years, but seemingly was just a game manager. And you feel like eventually that's going to run out, and it seems like this is a quarterback league, it's a passing league, and if you can't do that, you're going to have a tough time competing.
Yeah, I mean, just watch tape of that Jets-Baltimore game from 2 weeks ago. He's just horrible. The Jets carried him to the championship 2 years in a row, I think it's safe to say.
All right, now, it's safe to say that the Denver Bronco fans were excited to see the installment of Tim Tebow. He didn't win the game for him. It was 29-24, didn't cover the four-point spread, but he did seemingly bring them back from a big deficit and make this game much more interesting than it should have been.
Well, this was definitely the backdoor cover, but it basically got backdoor covered twice. Tebow comes in, he leads them on this ridiculous comeback, and basically they're down 16 points, I believe. He leads them down for a touchdown, they get the two-point conversion. You're like, okay, no big deal. There's no way he's going to do that again. So what does he do? He leads them down. Brandon Lloyd makes this absurd one-handed catch. They go down, they score another touchdown. You're like, well, now we need him to get the two-point conversion so that San Diego is motivated to score and so they can cover this 3.5-point spread. What happens? They screw up the two-point conversion. It's a two-point game. You're like, great, San Diego's just going to run the clock out. They get some huge plays. They end up getting into field goal range with plenty of time, and they end up kicking a field goal and covering. So it was another game that would have been fun to watch in a sports book. Plus, the whole Tebow thing, like this is horrible if you're a Broncos fan because he's not a good quarterback, and you're excited for him to be a good quarterback.
He just looks uncomfortable. He doesn't look like he's comfortable in the quarterback position, and you see him scrambling, and how are guys not taking his head off? How are they not?
Well, he's a big guy, and I think he'll be able to scramble all right. It's just
wide open. He's got a little bit more legs than a Roethlisberger, but he doesn't have Roethlisberger's arm. Or
wide open receivers, and he's throwing them at their feet. Brandon Lloyd's ridiculous catch was only needed because he overthrew him by like 3 feet.
Well, yeah, they talked about the idea that the reason he was number three on the depth chart was because he just looks that awful in practice. Like, he just throws balls all over the place. You know, you can't kind of make plays happen in practice like that. You're supposed to run the scout team offense. You don't want them to improvise. You want them to just run the offense as needed. And supposedly he's just looked like garbage the entire time. I don't know. Tim Tebow is an interesting guy in that it seems like he's one of these quarterbacks, as soon as they get some tape on him, if a team has a whole week to prepare on him, they're going to figure him out. But it's also maybe he is kind of a nice, you know, like a closer or something like that, or maybe like a middle relief pitcher where you don't want him starting the game. Maybe you let Orton or Brady Quinn start, and then you throw him in there at some point in the game because he does. I don't know. He seems to have something where he can make plays happen.
His equivalent in the NBA is Birdman. He comes off the bench with a ton of energy, gets the crowd all yoked up, and does
huge cocaine problem.
Does a couple good. I mean, Birdman, not a great basketball player, but he can grab boards, he can block shots, and he gets the crowd.
He gets people fired up around him. And you're like, Birdman's in. All right, I like that guy.
You know, stuck with the same city. I think that really is the equivalent. The crowd got all yoked up. They're like, Tebow's in the game. He does a couple. I mean, they're ignoring the fact that he can't hit open receiver, but he runs a couple times. He scores a touchdown.
Yeah, I'd love to see how, like, a Tim Tebow would do in a Philadelphia sports market. I feel like we wouldn't put up with that kind of Tim Tebow. The city of Philadelphia, I don't think, would embrace a kind of goody two-shoes. It's funny, these sports media people are like, I don't understand why people don't like Tim Tebow. This guy, he wears his religion on his shoulder. Sure, he's just about going out and doing the right thing. Sure, he does a lot of charity work. But he wins games, and that's all that matters. In the National Football League, there's... You know what? We don't care about ties. We care about two numbers, wins and losses. And Tim Tebow might have a chance to make some wins. Now, what people are annoyed about is that he's kind of a goody two-shoes. Yeah, sure, he doesn't rub it in your face. he is a nice guy, probably. But there is something, as a guy who presents himself as holier than thou, you know, it's kind of annoying.
Yeah, I mean, especially because of the Florida teams he was on with, like, chock full of women beaters and rapists, and he had no problem sharing the national championship trophy with
them. Yeah, sure, you stole tons of computers. What, I mean, that seemed like the story coming out of Florida. Every other thing was, like, guys ripping off laptops, mountain bikes.
Beating their girlfriend for the third time.
Hey, just like Jesus said, Tim Tebow probably told that girlfriend to just pull the Jesus move, turn the other cheek, try and move on.
There's no way this guy doesn't regret not being cooler in college. I mean, he's the best quarterback in the country.
It's a Jonas Brothers situation. Eventually, one day, he's going to wake up and realize, well, especially for Tim Tebow, because this NFL stint is not going to last long. And he's going to, he'll probably get laid in the youth ministry. He'll have a career afterwards. He'll have some,
he'll do some missions to the Philippines.
Yeah. It is funny to make fun of a guy for being charitable, but there is just something about a goody two-shoes that, I don't know, rubs people the wrong way. I just feel bad for the kid who, on ESPN, they do a make-a-wish type thing. I just feel bad for the kid that wasted his make-a-wish on Tim Tebow. I mean, Tim Tebow, you got to give it up for him. He's probably the first third-string quarterback to ever have a make-a-wish involved in meeting Tim Tebow. Hey, Tim, can you just... it is funny. I don't remember them showing that Tim Tebow actually throwing the ball to the kid at all. That would be really embarrassing. Like, it's my one dream to catch a touchdown pass from Tim Tebow. They're out there for like 35 minutes. Quick side note. Speaking of make-a-wish type situations, this obviously isn't a make-a-wish because the kid's not dying, but E60, ESPN 60, where they do those touching stories, ran a story about a kid with cerebral palsy who's really into sports talk radio and hosts his own internet sports talk radio station. And it's one of these things. Like, it's really touching because the dad's kid was, or you know, the kid's dad was an athlete, and you know, he's got all these sons who play sports, and he can't do sports, so he's living vicariously by doing the sports talk radio show. And then to make things worse, he's a Philadelphia sports fan. He's doing the thing where he's like talking down other teams, like the Atlanta Falcons got shellacked last week. He's doing it in that voice.
So he's basically doing the Mad Dogs act.
Exactly. Hey, it was really inspiring, but then it was also really tough because knowing where the Eagles are this season and just thinking of this poor kid hosting a sports talk radio show every week. Like, I have trouble getting up for these shows after the Eagles lose. I can only imagine this poor kid with cerebral palsy. But it was a really touching story, and he seemed like a good kid. Got a little sidetracked there, but that's all right. We weren't sidetracked with our locks, Ryan. We had Oakland. Oakland covering that spread. I think 5.5, 6 points. They won outright. Oakland 25, Houston 20.
And if you listened to me last week, you would have taken the money line.
This was your upset pick.
My upset money line pick. And, I mean, that went exactly as I thought it would. I thought Houston kind of screwed themselves by not calling enough run plays. They kind of just gave up on the run, and that's kind of their bread and butter. And Oakland, not a
now,
great
is,
team.
Is Arian Foster 100%?
He's healthy now. He devastated them on those screen passes. He's just dominating.
Okay, now let's take a look. Or you got Cincinnati, Jacksonville, Carolina, New Orleans, Tennessee, Pittsburgh. I honestly thought Tennessee would give this Pittsburgh team a little bit more of a fight. This Pittsburgh team, hard to get a read on these guys, especially they had more offensive linemen out.
Here's the read,
I think we
Sean.
Were talking about this off the show. You're just pointing out that Pittsburgh seems to be really good at home and really awful on the road.
And I think what you mentioned about the offensive line, it's not crazy to think that a offensive line will be perform much better at home where it's not noisy.
It's easier to make the calls. It's easier to hear your center, that kind of thing. Where if you have veterans, those are the veteran offensive linemen who've played together, know their assignments. They do much better on the road.
It's just it's mostly remarkable that their defense has been getting shredded. So,
I feel like I haven't. We're 5 games into the season. I haven't seen any crazy Polamalu plays.
No, and he's had a good season. He
yeah. I mean, from what I've seen of the Pittsburgh games, he seems to be in on the tackles, this and that. But remember, 5 games in, you expect a superhuman play at some point.
Yeah, I can't figure this. I think you just bet on them when they're at home and bet against them when they're on the road.
We'll take a look at the Week 6 lines here in a second. Just want to wrap up these couple other games.
Well,
man,
you almost forgot the Eagles at the Buffalo Bills. We should probably talk about that. So this was more one of the more easy lines of the week, I thought. I mean, Buffalo's getting 3 points, getting 2.5 points at home against an Eagles team that has yet to prove it, and they did not prove it on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, nothing about this game was a surprise. I mean, I guess you could be surprised at the way the Eagles team have done overall. But if you look at their tape from the past few games, this has just been consistent with what they've done. They've been able to move the ball as an offense, but the defense is playing like complete shit. They're turning the ball over in inopportune times. I guess maybe some of those are a couple bad breaks, but it's also Vic either getting pressured and, you know, wanting to stay in the pocket too long, not knowing whether or not to scramble, him getting hit while he's throwing.
It's the same thing every week.
Stop the run.
It's the same thing every week.
I mean, they had six. Well, they had five turnovers. Andy Reid pointed out. You suppose they have a 6% chance of winning with five turnovers. You can look at the positives if you're an Eagles fan like myself, in that they've been in practically every one of these games. Every one of these games that they lost came down to the last drive, with the exception of the Giants game. But they were in that game for the majority of the game.
But it's the same reason every week. Vic's getting hit and turning the ball over because the offensive line stinks.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same issues that we were talking about in the preseason, a weak offensive line and no linebackers. I mean, this is going to cost Andy Reid his job. The idea of you going into a season, I don't know, he's just worried about eating some Chicky and Pete fries, just shoving fucking cheesesteaks in his fat walrus head, and didn't ever occur to him that maybe you need a middle linebacker, or maybe they're going to be testing for HGH and Casey Matthews isn't going to be able to put together a great year like his older brother. I blame a lot of this on Andy Reid, obviously. I mean, you're five games in, you're already looking for a defensive consultant. You want? I'll be a defensive consultant. I'll show up there, we'll do the Oklahoma drill, I'll show these guys how to tackle and how to become men, lower your shoulder, keep your head up, drive through, wrap up. I mean, it's frustrating that they're just losing these games on fundamentals, and yet they're still kind of in these games.
I think the consultant should just go to Andy and be like, why'd you hire an offensive line coach to coach defense? That's what the consultant needs to say.
Well, it's one of those moves that it seemed so out of left field. Okay, he must know what he's doing. Like, no one would just hire this offensive line coach.
Well, the spin was he understood how to beat offensive lines because he coached them.
I guess what you could say, I mean, my defense would be the guy played defense as a professional and that he was with the organization for a long time, so he's familiar with the personnel, some of the personnel that was there.
Lawrence Taylor played defense, too. He's not coaching it.
Yeah, no, I know. The thing he's coaching is how to force yourself on a 17-year-old prostitute.
And have your wife take your back.
Man, that is true Hall of Fame material. You want to talk about what professional athletes can get away with? Imagine getting involved with an underage prostitute scandal and not only having your wife stand by you, but adamantly defend you to the point, yeah, they're just a bunch of haters hating on my man.
The quote of the whole like incident was, what's he supposed to do, card her? That's what Lawrence Taylor's wife said to the media.
Which is something Lawrence Taylor should say to his buddies at the strip club when he's hanging out after the smoke is cleared. But no, that's what his wife is saying. Can you imagine what Lawrence Taylor's saying? I mean, I kind of feel bad for Lawrence Taylor, too. He seems like he's a tortured guy. But then he also seems like he has such a sweet life. I don't know where these demons come from. He was an awesome professional athlete. He has a ton of money. And all he does, it seems like, is golf all day during the day, come home, have a dinner, go out to the strip club, get drunk, wake up, golf.
go to like three Giants games a year and get announced at halftime and have the crowd go crazy.
Seems like a sweet gig. All right, so this game, the Kansas City Chiefs versus the Indianapolis Colts, I kind of liked Indy here. I thought maybe this would, 'cause this Indy team seems to be playing hard. Curtis Painter doesn't seem to be that bad. But they got out to a lead, and then Kansas City came back, won the game outright, 28-24. I don't know, any thoughts moving forward on either of these teams?
I think a couple – it might have been you or someone else mentioned to me that they read something that said Dwayne Bowe felt that the lack of the offseason really hurt their offense and that they're starting to come together, and I think they're starting to look like they're coming together. without their best running back, they're really starting to be able to move the ball, even though Matt Castle really sucks, and their defense is playing all right.
So maybe Kansas City is kind of the sneaky team.
I think Kansas City might be a team you maybe bet on at home over the next couple weeks.
All right, now another team that looked pretty awful as far as letting leads slip away, but seemingly put together a good game. You know, Adrian Peterson is going to win you some games, and that seems like what happened here, Arizona in Minnesota. Minnesota winning big, 34-10.
That one highlight sums it all up. Adrian Peterson gets the ball like the 15 or 20-yard line. He makes a couple guys miss, and then he gets hit by a cornerback or safety at like the 9-yard line. And this guy is on Adrian Peterson's face, and he literally carries him into the end zone. That was pretty much how the game went. AP scored 3 first-quarter touchdowns. And that was it. That was the end of the game.
So when did the Arizona Cardinals give up on Kevin Cobb?
It's a pretty amazing. I mean, I felt the same way when the trade happened. Why, you're giving up a second round pick, your best cornerback, and you're going to pay him $60 million? I don't know. I mean, he still has his moments where he looks solid when he doesn't get flustered. But he has a little bit of that Alex Smith, David Carr. Where once he gets flustered, he just goes from being a very good quarterback to a really very bad quarterback. And
well, that's what I said when the Eagles got rid of him. Look at his eye level. I was watching NFL Matchup or something. They pointed out, you look at his eyes, he doesn't consistently look downfield because he's afraid of the pressure. He doesn't have that poise. And that's what you see from a guy like Cam Newton, even a rookie, 5-6 games in. The guy just looks comfortable in the pocket. It's the same way when Jay Cutler is playing poorly, when Tony Romo is playing poorly. You can see they don't feel confident in the way they set their feet. They do that drop, and then when they get that 5-step drop, they're already moving their feet because they already have that extra sense of the pressure. And they don't seem to know when to get rid of the ball. And if you wait for pressure to come get you, you're going to make bad decisions.
That's one thing that Eli does that's really frustrating sometimes is he looks past the blockers to the point where he'll just get sacked because he doesn't see a guy coming at his face, which...
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be the fine art of, you know, hanging in the pocket and knowing when to get rid of it. And ball release is really an important skill. I mean, that's what separates Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, I think, is their ability to stay in the pocket, be poised, have great footwork, and still not take too many shots. All right, so Ryan, you're talking about Eli Manning. Give me a reason that the Seattle Seahawks coming in, getting 10 points, still beat the Giants by 11 points, 36-25. What happened here?
Turnovers. And this is crazy to say, but I kind of knew it going in, but Seattle has a good defense. They played well. Eli kind of shredded them with the pass game, but their defense got turnovers, and a couple of them were weird, fluky deflections. Like the play, the Giants probably win that game if Victor Cruz doesn't tip that pass in the air and it turns into a pick six. But they play.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I feel like the Giants already have kind of gotten a couple of those breaks early on, and maybe they weren't quite as good as the number of wins they had. But
I'll be honest, I said it coming into the game. I think I might have said it on the show that the Giants have had trouble against teams. I definitely said it before the Eagles game, but the Giants have had trouble in the secondary when they're playing teams with bigger physical receivers, which the Seahawks have. And the Seahawks were able to move the ball. Tavares Jackson looked decent. Charlie Whitehurst looked good. Marshawn Lynch had a good game. And I think that trend's going to continue, that you're going to see when the Giants play teams with smaller, speedier receivers, they're going to be able to do all right because the cornerbacks can contain them. But these big physical guys, they just push Aaron Ross and Corey Webster around, so... We'll see. It was a pretty bad loss.
Yeah. I mean, as an Eagles fan, that was one of my few moments of consolation was that the Giants lost. And it's weird. I mean, obviously I'm not excited for the Eagles situation as far as moving forward. But, I mean, realistically, at 1-4, if they beat the Redskins, they'll be 2-4. The Redskins will be 3-2. Giants, who do the Giants have this week?
The Bills.
The Bills, which are a pesky bunch, and then the Cowboys are playing the Patriots. So, seemingly, if the Eagles win and the Cowboys and Giants lose, they're only kind of like a game and a half out of this thing. And for as poorly as they played, going into a bye week, maybe they fire Castillo, maybe they get a defensive coordinator who can teach these guys how to tackle. I don't know. But I'm still not optimistic. I mean, this Eagles game, the Eagles going into the Washington Redskins. The Redskins are getting a point and a half. We'll start off with this game first, kind of transitioned into it here. I'm obviously very worried about Hightower. I mean, the one thing we got going for me is that, I don't know, I'm still not a believer in Rex Grossman. He just doesn't seem to get it done even when he gets it done. Even when they win.
Here's the thing. This game, they could win this game with Mark Sanchez, I think. The Eagles won't be able to stop this run game.
Yeah.
And not only that, but the Redskins have been getting after the quarterback better than anyone else in the league, or as good as anyone else in the league. And I think unless the Eagles bust a bunch of big plays and DeSean Jackson has a really good game, I don't see how Rex Grossman throws a bunch of interceptions. I'm not sure that I honestly don't know why the Eagles are favored. We're 5 weeks in. We got to start, calling adjusting a spade it. A spade.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I was expecting this to be Redskins -3. I mean, and I could even see it being higher. And maybe that's just me being a negative Eagles fan, but I don't see what about this team makes you think that on even field the Eagles are 4.5 points better. I just haven't.
Not only that, it opened at Redskins -1 and moved. So that means people think they're still getting a discount on this Eagle. I mean, the same thing happened last week. The most popular pick in our Hilton contest was the Eagles -3 in Buffalo. People don't want to give up on this Eagles team.
I guess I don't see it. I mean, maybe when they go 1-5, then you'll see a huge adjustment for these lines. But and maybe people are banking on the fact that they're due for a rebound. But until you've seen them play well, I think you're crazy to pick them in any situation.
It'd be one thing if they got unlucky, but they keep losing the same way every week.
You know what, Ryan? It's like they say in the National Football League, until you beat it, you're going to see it. And the Eagles have been seeing it.
1-4 against the spread, right?
Yeah, 1-4 against the spread. Not look good against the spread. All right, well, let's take a look at some of these early matchups. Huge spread here. The Packers playing host to the St. Louis Rams. Rams coming off a bye. Packers coming off a nice win in Atlanta. The Rams are getting 14.5 points.
Rams have looked horrible. They probably rarely do you want to bye in week 4, but they were probably glad it came in week 4. Allowed them to kind of recoup, get together, figure out what's wrong. And like I mentioned earlier, the Packers looked a little bit flustered with the couple new offensive linemen in place. I think they're starting 2 rookies at the tackle positions. And it's 14.5. This is the NFL. I know that the Rams haven't looked great, but I think Sam Bradford had a full week and a half to practice with his kind of banged up receiving core, get on the same page. Steven Jackson will be healthy, and I think you can definitely gash the Packers with the running game. So I'm going to take the Rams. I actually have slowly I went from thinking that I like anything more than 14 points to thinking that I really like this Rams pick here just because it's 14.5. I kind of like the matchup of the Rams D-line against the Packers O-line in this game to kind of cause some trouble.
All right. Now, I was originally leaning to the Packers here, but you kind of talked me into it with your logic there. I guess they are coming off a bye, and you feel like they are professional athletes. They have a ton of talent, and to keep it within 14.5 with this.
That's a big spread in the NFL. I mean, during the course of a season, if you take out the season where the Patriots were murdering everyone, you might see 4 spreads over two touchdowns in the entire season. And I don't have the numbers, but I can't imagine they're covering too often.
All right. Now, another big spread here, another 10 a.m. kickoff West Coast time. Pittsburgh Steelers playing host to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Jaguars getting 12 points. I'm leaning to the Steelers on this one. I think of these two big spreads, one hits, one doesn't. I'll go with the Rams and the Steelers. Like we talked about earlier, the Steelers just seem to be a juggernaut at home. They blew out who'd they blow out earlier? That was a garbage team.
Seattle.
So I think a seminal moment in their season and a similar situation here. I feel like you can kind of compare the Jags' level of talent. Obviously, Maurice Jones-Drew and the Steelers have had trouble stopping the run. But I think unlike the Texans, who were able to beat the Steelers 17-10 2 weeks earlier, I think the Jags are too one-dimensional, and I think Pittsburgh will be able to work around that. And I think Blaine Gabbert will have trouble in Heinz Field.
I agree. Blaine Gabbert's going to get completely confused. I think you're going to see that defense really step up this week. And that offense looked great last week. Roethlisberger's sling on the rock. They were able to move the ball a little bit to run. Jacksonville's got a pretty good defense, but I think this is a blowout. I think it's going to be. I mean, Tennessee's a much better team, and they blew out Tennessee. I'm looking for the Steelers to win something in the maybe 28-3 or 28-6. I don't even think Jacksonville doesn't score 10 points in this game.
Right, like your logic there. Now
I also like the under in this game too. I don't even know what the number is, but I'm going to take the under.
Okay, we can look that up. Okay. Detroit Lions, coming off a huge win, short week, Monday night, 10 a.m. kickoff. 49ers, also coming off a huge win, where they destroyed the Bucs, 48-3. I think we might have missed that game, talking about last week. But yeah, 49ers just blew them out. Didn't seem like...
We skipped it because the Bucs skipped that game. So.
Exactly. The Bucs didn't show up. We're not going to show up to discuss that game. I thought that Bucs game would be a little closer, to be honest, but this 49ers team seems to be for real. They can definitely run the ball. You're still worried about Alex Smith. Frank Gore seems to be doing well. The defense is playing strong. The coach has got them playing together. But then you could say the same thing for this Lions team, man. Lions, first time ever. Or no, first time since like 1950, something like that. 5-0.
I could be wrong here, but I believe both of these teams are undefeated against the spread. And I think what we've learned is that the 49ers...
I think they're both 4-1, but I can double
4-1.
Check.
4-1. Both of these teams have solid... I mean, I think the 49ers, I'll give them the slight edge in defense, but I think I trust Matthew Stafford and Calvin Johnson. But I honestly think this game's going to come down to the team that can run the ball better, and I think the 49ers have a much better running game. I think you see Javon Best, he can pop a big run, but that's it. And I don't see... the 49ers getting gashed like the Chicago Bears did with poor tackling from the safety position. So what I'm going to do here, I like this a little bit better when it opened at 5.5, but I'm gonna roll with the 49ers plus 4 here.
Well, we talked about this earlier on the phone, and I was saying 4 to maybe 5.5. I felt like this was a stay away. 5.5 and above, I like the 49ers. 4 and below, I like the Lions. I think I'm going to take the Lions here. And it's just kind of me doing the math here of the 49ers coming off a big blowout. Usually young teams, even if they're playing well, there seemingly is a letdown after a blowout game against Tampa. And you could say the same thing for the Lions, big win at home Monday night, short week. And maybe this is where they run into the wall here with the 49ers. But there just seems something about this Lions team that I'm not going to go against yet.
I just think this should be a 3-point spread. That's all.
No, I think maybe you're getting a point there. But two seemingly solid teams. I think they match up well with each other. I'm gonna take Calvin Johnson, man.
Who would have thought this would be the national game early? I mean, this is.
I mean, just because Calvin Johnson just seems unstoppable right now.
He is unstoppable.
When you have, I think you could make an argument he's the best player in the league right now. When you just see the way he just dominates teams, the way he just kind of beheaded the Dallas Cowboys in Dallas.
He consistently beats double coverage, so it's tough to argue against that.
I think what, you know, the kind of last piece that tilts me in favor of the Lions is that line. I like Sue. I like his swagger. I think that he brings an energy to this team.
On that note, I think what you saw is that in Forte is that I think you can run against this defense because they run a similar style to the Eagles where they run the wide nine and they're very aggressive. So I think that...
Yeah, that's true. But I think also when you play the Bears, that's kind of a different game for a number of reasons. You're worried about Cutler going deep. You're worried about Cutler's ability to throw the ball. I think they're going to throw a lot of guys in the box, force Alex Smith to beat him. This place is going to be rocking again. And I think Alex Smith might be exposed here.
If he here's
These
the
th- guys, if, you know, not good quarterbacks don't play well in domes on the road.
Alex Smith needs to attempt over 5 passes beyond 20 yards. Otherwise, I think Detroit will win this game.
Right. I mean, it's one of these games, 4-point spread. You can't be shocked either way here. But I'm gonna roll with the Lions. I'm kind of talking myself into this pick. Now this next one, another possibly interesting game. Carolina Panthers getting 4 points at the Atlanta Falcons. Carolina Panthers have undefeated against the spread right now. They're 4-0-1, or maybe even 5-0, depending on where you got that first game against the Cardinals. Going up against the Falcons, who just have not looked good. Lost a tough one against Green Bay. Almost lost against Seattle. They haven't looked good in a win yet. I mean, I guess you could say maybe they look good against the Eagles. I mean, I don't know, man. I'm not sold on this Falcons team. They're 2-3, pretty big disappointment going into this game. Panthers, though, as good as Cam Newton's look, they haven't been able to win more than one game. Do they have a chance to stay in this game, Ryan? Do they have a chance to cover the 4 points?
I think, when I looked at this, I looked at the matchups before I saw the spread. I thought this would be around a 6.5-point spread. And I was a little surprised.
Well, yeah, I think that's probably what it would have been. But I think finally people are kind of catching on, which I'm kind of annoyed because the Panthers were always the team I feel like I've picked them almost most weeks now.
I think this is the week they've gotten a little bit too much respect. I think they have the worst defense in the they would be probably a 3-2 team if they didn't have the worst defense in the league. And I think what you're going to see is I think the Falcons looked decent against the Packers. The main thing was their defense looked solid. I thought their defense was impressive, more impressive than I thought they would be against a really good offense. And I think the Falcons being at home, I think
no, you're gonna, Julio Jones.
Yeah, although I'm not sure that hurts him that much because he hasn't been as good as his numbers might lead on. If you look at the underlying stats there. I like the Falcons to come out to a lead early and stick to the run. I think what killed them against the Packers is they went away from the run too early. I think they stick with the run. They pound it with Turner. And like I said, I thought this should have been around 6 or 7 points. It's at 4, so I'm going to take the favorite at home to get a – I think this will be one of those wins where you're like, okay, maybe Cam – I think Cam Newton's going to get figured out a little bit in this game.
He definitely had a few of those moments.
Although I will say, I don't know the status of Abraham, but assuming if Abraham's not playing, I think this is a layoff game. But assuming he's playing, I think he and the defensive line kind of keeps Cam Newton in check.
Yeah, man, this is tough for me. I mean, I thought you had solid logic on what you're feeling for why the Falcons would kind of rebound here and win this game.
That being said, Cam Newton's kind of done it. He's put up points, and it's hard to...
He's just so fun to pick because that last drive, you know he's going to get that garbage touchdown. He's done it already a few times.
But I hate to wish injury on someone, but this just... is this his first game on turf this year? First game? And it just... Those turf games, he's going to take a hit. I don't know if you've seen him. He doesn't slide. He dives, and he's just going to get his head smashed on that turf. And
all right. I'll take the Falcons, although my heart wants to take the Panthers. Why couldn't they give me 4.5, Ryan? God damn it. Four and a half, I like the Panthers. That 4, though, I feel like it's good for the Falcons.
Yeah, if this was up in the 6 range, like
Oh, man, 5.5, I'd even like
all that. All over the Panthers, but...
All right, now, two teams that, well, seem to be going in opposite directions here. The Colts still struggling, but they're getting 7 points in Cincinnati. Cincinnati, just a, surprising team. I think people are a little surprised that Andy Dalton's been able to put this together, and they seem to be playing all right ball.
I think what you have to remember here, because you can get caught up with Cincinnati looked good, Indy hasn't looked great. But if you remove the games where Kerry Collins started, the Colts have actually been pretty solid with Painter. And I think you have to sit back and remember that Andy Dalton's a rookie. And no rookie should be favored by a touchdown in the NFL. I don't necessarily think the Colts can win this game or will win this game, but I think the Bengals will be successful slightly with the run, but they haven't been as good as you might think just because it's quantity. They run a lot of times. They don't get a good average. And you know, like I said, Dalton's a rookie, and you know the Colts are an NFL team, and they have looked better with Painter.
Yeah, I think the Colts have been playing hard. I think they're due to maybe – I wouldn't say win, but due to squeak out something close here.
I really was hoping this would be like a 4-point spread, so I could take the Bengals. But I don't think you can take the Bengals laying a touchdown.
Yeah, I'll go with the Colts 7 points here. Now the New York football Giants playing host to the Buffalo Bills off a big NFC East victory for them where they defeated my Philadelphia Eagles 31-24. Now the Bills heading to New Meadowlands Stadium. I forget the exact name.
MetLife
Stadium. Some corporate sellout. When I guess MetLife is probably one of those one percenters.
Yep. No, right. No Lincoln Financial.
Oh, Lincoln Financial's got a nice ring to it.
They're blue collar, right?
Abe Lincoln freed the slaves. I don't know if you remember that. Kept this nation unified.
What's your take on this game, Sean?
My take on this game is that I like that half point. I like that 3.5. I like that hook that the Bills are getting. Honestly, 3 and under, I like the Giants. 3.5, I'm going to go with the Bills.
So real quick, I mentioned it earlier. I think the Giants' defense matches up better against teams with smaller. Not that the Bills' receivers are tiny, but they're not the physical presence that some of these other receivers are. I think their defense will have a little bit of trouble stopping them, but as you saw last week, I think Eli has that offense dialed in, and they were moving the ball. If not for some turnovers, they probably put up mid-30s in the game against the Seahawks.
But yeah, I mean, that's, if you're saying not for those turnovers, that's kind of why I'm also...
Sure.
No, I'm saying that's kind of why I'm picking the Bills. The Bills...
They have been the beneficiary of some of those fluky turnovers.
You just see teams in the NFL, like just with Brady. I mean, it's Tom Brady. How often does he throw 4 interceptions? The Eagles, as bad as they've played, they cause 5 turnovers against them. They seem to be just kind of on a roll with these turnovers. 3.5. I'm gonna take that field goal and a half point.
And that's probably the smart move. But Bills coming off a big win at home. Giants got embarrassed. I look for them to bounce back. And buyer beware here. Everyone is betting. 80% of the money is on the Bills, has been on the Bills. Okay. Yet somehow the spread moved from 3 to 3.5. Mm-hmm. And we see a couple of these spreads a week where you don't really understand the line movement. It's moving in the opposite direction of public money, which usually means some well-known, well-respected NFL handicapper or syndicate has placed a large sum of money on the Giants. So just something to think about. This happened in week 2 with the Tennessee-Baltimore game. Everyone and their mother was betting on Baltimore, and yet the spread went from everyone was betting on Baltimore, and yet the spread dropped from 6 to 5.5. And whenever that happens, there's something fishy going on. So just don't be surprised if the Giants come out and slaughter them.
All right.
I'm slightly dizzy over here, Sean.
Well, you know, slaughter's a strong word, Ryan. Maybe cover the 3.5, okay. But slaughter's a strong word. Well, there's a potential slaughter going down in the M&T Stadium where the Ravens will be welcoming in the Houston Texans, where the Houston Texans are getting 7.5 points, which seems a lot for this Houston Texan team, but they are a little banged up. Do we know the status? Is Andre Johnson and Mario Williams out for this game?
Mario Williams is out for the season.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize he was out for the – I knew he's out.
Andre Johnson is out for this game. As you probably saw, they picked up Derek Mason in a trade from the Jets. The Ravens coming off a bye week. Not sure if that's good or bad in their case. They were kind of in a groove. We kind of spoke a little bit about this off the air, and I really like the Texans here. I think the Texans can win this game. I think it's basically a matchup between two defenses. I think the Ravens has a great defense. I think the one thing to look at is that they haven't exactly played a top offense, and I think the Texans will be able to move the ball. And then the matchup I like is I like the Texans' defense against the Ravens' offense. The Ravens' offense, if you look through, they have not had a lot of long, sustaining drives. They've had a lot of big plays. They've had a lot of defensive touchdowns. I think the Texans forced them to kind of have a long, drawn-out drives, and I don't trust Joe Flacco to convert. I like the Texans to keep it close, and I could see Baltimore. I could see this being like a 21-17, 21-24 type game where it's a field goal or a 4-point game either way.
I'm going to counter that, Ryan, by saying I'm kind of worried that the Texans will be a little too one-dimensional without Andre Johnson. They struggle to put up points at home in Houston against the Oakland Raiders. And I'd make an argument that the Ravens defense has been playing fairly strong. And they're coming off
To your point, I think that's the reason they didn't do well against the Raiders is they were too one-dimensional in that they called too many pass plays. They didn't stick to their bread and butter, which is run, play action, and rolling out Schaub. So I think they get back to a balanced approach.
All right, yeah, I'm just going off their recent loss to the Raiders, where they lost 5 points at home. Now you're going on in the road to Baltimore. I like the Ravens here to cover 7.5. I mean, I'd like it better, obviously, if it was 6.5 or 7, but I think this Raven team has got a little something going on for them, and I think they've had a couple nice wins. Obviously, you got some questions there with Flacco. The defense, though, seems to be strong. They seem to be a little undervalued as a team, and I think they're going to win at home. And I think it's going to be close to the number. I like them winning like 30-21, something like that.
That hook's going to get you.
It could. That's 7.5. There's a lot of tough lines this week. It's not going to be easy to decide where to gamble our money and gamble our picks. But one game I feel strong about is the stronger than some of these for sure. Oakland Raiders laying 6.5 points to the incoming Cleveland Browns. Ryan, give me a reason why the Cleveland Browns can win this game or at least cover this spread.
Well, they're coming off a bye week. I think it's a relatively disciplined team, although I went into the season drinking the Browns' Kool-Aid, and they just haven't shown it to me in three games.
Well, you got, I mean, well, and then
four games, and the Raiders have looked solid on both sides of the ball. They just made a trade today for Aaron Curry, former fourth pick in the draft, to shore up that linebacking core. The Browns haven't been able to run the ball like they need to be able to run the ball. That team needs the run to work so that they can run play action and keep the defense off
McCoy. And there seems to be something weird going on with Peyton Hillis. I think he missed one or two games from strep throat, and then it seemed like the coach wasn't sticking up for him, and then he said his agent told him not to play.
Well, yeah, I mean, he basically sat out because he isn't getting a new contract, and there's talk that he could even get traded, which seems unlikely, but there's talk that he might get traded before the deadline. It doesn't seem to be a cohesive locker room right now. And the Raiders, on the other hand, they've been a bit of a surprise. But
galvanized by the passing of Al Davis.
I think you kind of have to – Jason Campbell, who was always a solid quarterback, who kind of made some boneheaded plays, he still is that quarterback, but he has all the tools to get it deep to those speedy receivers and hand the ball off to McFadden, who – is arguably,
it's funny, like Hayward Bay's probably one of his better games in Houston. Poor Al Davis wasn't around to see it.
If this line opened at like 4.5, and I was really hoping it would stay low, but it's up to 6.5. I think you still have to take the Raiders. Anything under a touchdown, I'm taking the Raiders here, just because the Browns on both sides of the ball haven't shown me much at all.
A lot of comedy involved in the Al Davis eulogies. Very, it's like everyone wanted to call him an asshole, but just kept coming up with different euphemisms besides asshole. He was outspoken. He was brash. He followed his gut instinct, regardless of what anyone said. Or people would be like, he was a football genius, except for the last decade. a lot of weird caveats in the Al Davis eulogies.
I think I saw one that said, If you called Al Davis a conniving weasel, he would have taken it as a compliment.
It sounded like he was a colossal dickhead to a lot of people. I mean, he brought us John Madden, and for that, I'll ever, forever be indebted to Al Davis. I'm not gonna talk smack on the guy, but he sat down Marcus Allen for 2 years in the prime of his career because he was mad at him. I mean, he's had some crazy, crazy moves. But maybe he was right about Hayward Bay. And it was so great. One fan wrote in, I hated everything about Al Davis, but I love the fact that he made me hate him. What? People have this weird attachment to assholes. Like they almost, no one wanted to just come out and go, yeah, he was kind of a dick. But once you die, your kind of hard asshole edge is softened up, so people want to make excuses for you.
Just give it a couple weeks, and we'll have a Frank Caliendo impression of Al Davis.
Well, he—I mean, you don't even have to do an impression. Al Davis's face is not going to change, even though he's dead and he's decomposing. His face won't change much for like 3-4 months. I mean, he kind of had the Crypt Keeper look while he was alive.
His teeth certainly won't get any yellower.
Come on, Al Davis, get some caps, man. Do something with that. He was 82 years old though, and the football was his life. His family and football, that's his entire life. His family was probably like, God, please let us go. But yeah, Brown's going on a West Coast road trip here. The locker room's falling apart. I don't think 6.5 is enough for Cleveland to win this game. Or win this spread, rather. New England Patriots, Ryan, laying 7 points to America's team, the Dallas Cowboys. Cowboys coming off a bye. Patriots coming off a solid win against the Jets. What do you think, Ryan?
I wish New England's defense was a little bit better. It'd make it easier to pick them. I still think I'm going to pick them, only because I think Bill Belichick is really good at making you one-dimensional. And when you're already one-dimensional like the Cowboys are, and you choose and aren't good at running the ball, I think Belichick's going to find a way to kind of shut the, all they have is the pass. I think what you're going to see, I think Miles Austin is going to play. I'm not sure if he's 100%. Dez Bryant is healthy. But I think what you're going to see is they're going to take Witten out of the game. And I think what you're going to see is Witten is the key to that offense. And Belichick is the best coach in the league at taking one guy out of the game and or one thing you do really well out of the game. So, and the Cowboys defense hasn't exactly been stellar. They've been good for stretches, but I can't really go against the Patriots right now, especially with the way that Tony Romo and that offense has looked.
Patriots, too hot. Too hot. And, yeah, bye week helps you if your team's playing well. But, I mean, that was possibly one of the more epic collapses. So you have 2 weeks of sitting in Dallas just reading about how you're a loser, reading about how you let this huge lead get away. You're riding high off that San Francisco victory, and you just lost all that once again. Tony Romo was an emotional guy. If you listen to his press conference, he's a guy who's rattled and has issues with confidence. And I don't think a bye week helped your confidence coming off a tough loss like that. Now you got to go up to New England in Foxborough. I like the Patriots laying 7 points. I like the Patriots, man. They're a good team. Tom Brady is looking as sharp as he's ever looked, and you're going to need to give me more than 7 points for me to pick against them. I mean, they beat the Jets by 9 points, and obviously the Jets. The Jets beat the Cowboys. I mean, obviously the NFL doesn't work like that per se, but I think if anyone has had a history of figuring out the Patriots, it's been Rex Ryan, it's been the Jets. So the fact that even they couldn't make it a closer game than 9 points makes me think that the Patriots are safe laying 7 points. Obviously some concerns with the defense, but I think they're also getting Aaron Hernandez back.
And he's back. He played last week.
Okay, yeah.
And if I will say, though, if the Cowboys come out and run the ball and are successful at it, then I'm gonna be nervous about the Patriots' chances. But yeah, I like the Patriots to win big. I think this could be a 35-21 type game.
All right, now we got the Tampa Bay Bucks coming off a shellacking on the West Coast, coming home licking their wounds. And who's coming? Who's coming for those wounds? The Puma, known as Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints. 1:15 West Coast kickoff time, and the Bucks are getting 4.5 points at home. Seems a tad bit high to me, Ryan. What are your thoughts?
We should point out that this is one of only two home dogs this week, and this is one of those games you just kind of close your eye. I mean, it doesn't make a ton of logical sense because the Bucks have one of the – I think it's the worst pass defense. LeGarrette Blount could be out, but I think this is one of those games you close your eyes and you take the Bucks. Obviously, the one thing to think of in the NFL is a team's never as bad as they look and they're never as good as they look. So I think what you're going to see here is the Bucks bounce back. I think this is one of those games where the Bucks, they get a special teams touchdown or they just they come out to an early lead and they play a tight game. And I think what you're going to see is the Saints end up winning by a late field goal, but I'm going to take the Bucks getting those 4.5 at home.
Yeah, I think a lot of the same logic we could be applied when the Saints played Carolina. You got a dome team going on the road on turf. That Tampa field always kind of seems sloppy to me. I can see maybe getting some rain in there, slowing that game down. I just have a feeling the Bucs at home, they're not a great team.
No way Josh Freeman has two stinkers in a row. I mean, he's a solid quarterback. I think.
Yeah, and we could quote the old adage of you underperform the spread by more than 21 points, you're getting points the next week. That's usually a good bet.
Yeah, I think you just have to close your eyes and take the Bucs here. I don't see the Saints haven't exactly shut anyone down. So I mean, they couldn't even. They even let Blaine Gabbert and the Jacksonville score a couple of touchdowns. So I think you're going to see – I could see this being a late field goal, Saints win 27-24 or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because I don't see the Bucs necessarily winning this game, but I don't see the Saints winning by more than 4.5. I like that number of 4.5. I think 3 and under, obviously, the Saints I feel like pretty strong about. But the Bucs 4.5 at home. I mean, this is a solid team. I mean, yeah, LeGarrette Blount might not be there, but I don't know. It's just a gut instinct that they're going to be at home. They got that cannon going. Don't underestimate the cannon. This team seems to have a little bit going. They got derailed in San Francisco, but I look for them to bounce back and keep it close.
That's something else, like the completely irrelevant fact that probably doesn't affect the game, but seems like it might, is the East Coast games that start at 4:15, that's a long time to be tailgating. I mean, those fans are there. I mean, I guess maybe they've changed some rules, but odds are that they're tailgating. They're starting early. They're starting probably 10 a.m. East Coast. So.
Well, and it's Florida, so they were probably, chewing up pain pills at some pill mill the night before. So they woke up, threw down a couple Oxy.
You mean the pain distribution centers or whatever they call themselves?
Yeah, I mean, it's Florida. They were probably, woke up early, drank 6 beers, went out, Spirit of Marlin. Then they come back, start grilling it up, bump up some Oxycontin. They'll be ready to go when the Saints roll into town for 1:15 kickoff. Sunday night game, Chicago Bears at home. Chicago Bears not looking good, but maybe they start looking good against the Minnesota Vikings, where the Vikings are only getting 2.5 points. And I don't know, Ryan. Give me a reason to pick the Vikings because this line is just screaming Bears to me. I know the Bears haven't looked good. I know their issues are well documented. But the Bears at home on Sunday night, I feel like, yeah, granted it's a short week against Detroit. But I don't know. I think they kind of match up well against the Vikings. Give me your thoughts.
Well, the Bears... they're not doing it as well this year, but historically they stop the run. The Vikings have to run the ball. I really like this. I like the Bears at -3. I really like it at -2.5. And I think one of the reasons it's been so tough this week to pick spreads is this is one of only two games that has a 3-point or less spread. They're just not your typical -3 spreads this week. And I think what you're going to see here is I think the Bears have a good game. The Vikings haven't been getting pressure on the quarterback. And to be honest with you, Jay Cutler looked good last week. He was getting hit almost every play, and he was still completing passes. And Matt Forte looked good. So I think the Bears neutralize Adrian Peterson, and I think they win the game. I think this will be a shockingly high-scoring game. I think this is one of those games where everyone bets the under, and it ends up being like a 31-24 game.
And I think we've realized, I think just the idea that you can only hide Donovan McNabb for so long. And, AP won that last game. I don't know if he can win another one on the road in division. And this is a division game, for Christ's sake. I mean... I don't know. I think the Bears, while they're not a great team, I think they've certainly shown more than the Vikings have. And to say that on an even field that the Vikings are a half point better, I'm just not seeing that right now. So I'm gonna say the Chicago Bears. Now, the Monday night game's another division matchup. The Miami Dolphins are getting 7 points in New York City. The Dolphins have yet to win a game. Rumors of Tony Soprano being fired. Of course, Rex Ryan on the hot seat, not looking to get fired anytime soon, but certainly a lot of criticism for this Jets team. What do you think, Ryan?
I was really hoping this would be 7.5. This is another one of those spreads where everyone's betting the Jets, but the spreads come down to 7 from 8. I think you almost have to apply the rookie quarterback logic to Mark Sanchez at this point and take the Dolphins.
Dolphins starting Matt Moore.
I know Matt Moore starting, but Matt Moore, over his career, in games where he's had time to prepare, he's been solid. In Carolina, the game he kind of had to come in and take over for DeLome didn't look good, but after having a week to prepare, and in this case they've had 2 weeks to prepare, I think he is a more than capable quarterback. He won't make too many mistakes. I think you're going to see them running the ball. Because the Jets haven't been great on defense this year, quite frankly. And I think you're going to see Mark Sanchez make mistakes. A lot of pressure playing on Monday night. Their receivers haven't really come to play. Santonio Holmes hasn't done much.
This one, I'm going to take the Dolphins getting 7 points just because it's a division game. Dolphins, they seem to play these other AFC East teams kind of tough. They kind of keep it close. I mean, obviously, I could see the Jets doing something here, but this Jets team definitely have lost a little bit of
their
swagger.
I don't think the Jets can score 21 points unless the defense or special teams puts points on the board. So,
yeah, I think maybe Jason Taylor has a couple plays with Mark Sanchez here. I like the Dolphins getting 7 points. Not crazy about it, but I feel like that's too high not to take the Dolphins here. All right, Ryan, let's wrap things up here. Give me a upset pick and a lock of the week.
So I'll start with my lock of the week. And I really there's a couple of games I really like, but I think I'm going to have to go with this Dolphins team. I think they might win the game outright. In fact, my underdog, I would also put Houston in this category because I think both Houston and the Dolphins can not only cover, but they can win outright.
All right, so you like Houston?
I like Houston to win outright in Baltimore.
Wow.
And I like the Dolphins to cover just because I don't trust the Jets to score enough.
All right, crazy. 2 7-point dogs, but you're feeling the mojo there, Ryan. All right, let's see. For my lock of the week, I'm going to go with the Bears, man. It's just screaming, pick me. Pick me. All right, I will.
I think what we're seeing, Sean, is we got to go with the back-to-back primetime Las Vegas Hilton contest picks again.
Yeah, I'll roll the Dolphins on Monday night. Yeah, anytime Monday night is big spread, it's usually like to take the points because there's that certain... Ask anyone who's played in the National Football League, Ryan, and they'll tell you when those primetime cameras are on, you know it.
But it just comes back.
Guys are playing for their jobs.
How can Mark Sanchez be favored by 7 points over anyone?
He can't be. Now for my upset pick. My upset pick of the week. I am going to have to select the Indianapolis Colts. I say they get it done in Cincinnati. Call it a gut instinct, but I think these Colts are due for something here. I don't know. Maybe it's a little crazy, but I like them. I don't know. I think they're going to give Cincinnati a run for its money here.
I like the Colts also. I think we kind of touched on it that, you know, Andy Dalton is a rookie, and at the end of the day, I think they had one of their better games last year or last week, and it was against Jacksonville, who isn't that good. And this Colts team is a relatively veteran team, and I think they go on the road and act like pros and get it done.
All right. You can get it done by logging on to winthetrophy.com. STG, the referral code. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to the Sports Gambling Podcast. You can now get the Sports Gambling Podcast on Stitcher. You can go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com, get it there, or you can get Stitcher on your phone. Great app. Make sure you check that out, and make sure you click the Amazon link and get any kind of jerseys, anything you want. Amazon obviously has everything. For Sean Green,
I'm Ryan Kramer, and I should announce that I have come out of retirement on Twitter. You can follow me at KramerCentric. I'll be posting all of our picks, plus calling some random Twitter people pussies. So
okay, look out for that. Maybe Ryan will be live tweeting some of these games. Look for that to happen. You can check me out at Green Room Show, or you can check out my comedy podcast, The Green Room. Thank you, everyone, and let it ride.